like immediately without any conversation, you may have a problem. And I always viewed myself as having a problem with the Rays because I always felt like they were going to outsmart me. But when you're taking on that kind of money and you knew the Red Sox had to trade them, they were just dying for someone to take on all the money, and the Giants did it. When they said they'd do it, that's it. The trade's happening. And I get why the Giants felt like getting this player, an all-star caliber player, signed to a long-term deal when you felt like you've been a bridesmaid when it comes to free agent signing. So this becomes your free agent signing. It just smelled of a little desperation to me because what happened to him in Boston, generally players are who they are, just like people are who they are. And so Devers on the Red Sox is going to be no different than Devers on the Giants, but it just sounds different. Oh, I'll play first base. I'll play the field. I'm a good company guy. That's sort of the falsity of the beginning of a relationship where everything is butterflies, unicorns, and, you know, roses and love. And then it gets stale, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, it's just like everything else. And I think that Devers is going to end up being that, and the Giants will regret this trade. And I talked about it, and you know this, sort of the day it happened. And it's not a big sample size, but it's going to be at some point.
David Sampson, former Marlins president, with us here on 95.7 The Game. And you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries. Always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.
You know, David, I want to, like, your opinion on this, because 20 years running a team, and I'm sure you come across many players that you've had to have some sort of sit down with, and I want to know, like, how realistic that change is to happen, whether it's Debo Samuel, Pablo Sandoval here in the Bay Area, Draymond Green, we've talked about this. There are certain athletes where you're like, dude, you got to get your body right. Like, and I'm not just about health, I'm talking about physical peakness to maximize not only your career, but the team's opportunities. And I feel like we're going to have that conversation with Rafi regarding his weight. I mean, how realistic is that conversation amongst the front office? And then what's the fallout when you do have a conversation like that with someone on a $300 million deal?
Well, two different things. You know, you don't say to your significant other, by the way, you know, are you pregnant? And and you just don't do that. And so with a player, you try to talk around it as much as possible by making sure that they've got everything available to them nutritionally inside the clubhouse, inside the kitchen. What we used to do with some players who weren't happy with the way they were eating is they ruined it for the rest of the team, and we take out some of the junk food in the clubhouse, both home and away. We would pay more attention to the menus, you know, pre and post game, trying to make sure that all the players sort of realized we were looking for health. We did weigh-ins every week, but there would be a time when we would have to speak to a player and just acknowledge, say, listen, it's impossible that you're gaining weight in the Florida summer without a roof. Like, how is this happening? Everybody else is losing weight except you, and we're trying to keep weight on, but with you, it's just not working. What do we do? And you sort of think about body type. You think about how to do it in a way that doesn't impact them mentally. You can get the sports psychologist involved. You just give the player every opportunity to recognize the problem and deal with it. Because when you have to step in, it becomes clumsy. It can become a minefield, just like it would in a personal relationship, where the player can go the other way and, like, eat in spite of you and not be healthy in spite of you. I mean, there's a player, I will never forget this, Prince Fielder. You know, he liked to eat, and when he was in our visiting clubhouse, you know, I think that his family had him be a vegan, but he would, like, order McDonald's into the clubhouse, you know, and there's no way that his family could have thought he was vegan. I mean, if you've seen him without a shirt, and I say that with all respect to him, because I've had a lot of beefcakey players who could rake, and boy, can Prince rake, but at some point, it becomes an issue if it impacts performance. And it will be interesting to see how it goes with Devers going forward. But to me, the weight is the least of the issues, and it's sort of the attitude and how it's going to work as a teammate and the fact that you have so much payroll assigned to him.
David Sampson, former Marlins president, with us here on 95.7 The Game. David, I think you're uniquely equipped to answer this question, considering your experience in the front office. There was a story by Jeff Passan of ESPN earlier this week that Commissioner Rob Manfred was in the Phillies clubhouse talking about a number of issues, including the potential inclusion of a salary cap in the next CBA. And essentially, Bryce Harper cursed him out and told him to get the F out of the clubhouse. What do you make of that story and that upcoming debate about a salary cap in Major League Baseball?
I would say that baseball owners are happy that a Scott Boras client is the one trying to carry the water on any issue, because no one in baseball cares about Scott Boras or his clients. And so whatever opinion Boras has and manifests through the mouth of his players, whether it's Scherzer or Harper, truly becomes irrelevant. And if you're the league, you know, you talk to the majority of the members of the union and they're not interested in Bryce Harper, who made his money. And then Boras comes out and says, hey, by the way, the cap has really been a problem for Bryce's whole career. And 89 to 94% of the union like laughs at that. They're trying to figure out if they can afford to, you know, eat spicy rigatoni tonight, not whether or not they're going to get a $300 million contract. They're trying to figure out if they can even get to arbitration, which the majority of players never get to in Major League Baseball. So I think it's a big nothing burger, the whole story. I think that the owners may ask for a salary cap for sure, like they have for 30 years, and may not get it. The question is, what will they get when they decide to stop asking for it? But that's not going to happen for many, many months. So for now, just get used to reading the owners talk about a cap and the players talking about no cap. And that is just the performative actions of two sides of a collective bargaining negotiation that at some point will get solved, but it's going to be painful in the process.
David, it feels like there's a variety of topics that at any given time could cause this strike or whatever they're calling it, lockout or whatever. There's obviously you referenced the arbitration, 6 years to get to free agency, which is larger than any of the other sports. There's obviously the regional sports network collapse, which is a huge revenue problem that I just don't think the average fan understands at all. And then there's a lot of game stuff and there's the salary cap stuff. How would you rank all of these in terms of importance of what's going to drive the big divide between players and owners?
The biggest divide between players and owners in any of the sports now is the view of players. And Steph Curry is a great example, who went on a podcast saying, man, I'm underpaid. I don't have equity in this team, and that's what I should have. That is a huge misconception of what's real and what's not. Because just because your valuation has gone up in the house you live in doesn't mean you have the cash to fix the kitchen. You can't go to a bank and say, look, my house is worth more money. Give me more money to fix the kitchen. You have to have collateral. You have to have the ability to borrow. So while teams are worth more and there is a payday at the end, when you sell, if you sell, it doesn't take away the need for operational responsibility and for profit on an annual basis. And there are many companies where the employees are working hard for the employers and don't own the business. That's like normal. It would be like you asking for a piece of your radio station because the radio station somehow is getting more in sales than they expected because your show is so good. I don't think that you'd find a sympathetic ear, but I guess I could be wrong. I just don't think so.
Yeah, our operating budget probably looks more like the Pirates or the Marlins, and no disrespect, in terms of the P&L. You know?
No, I get it. And so it's just funny that your station may be worth more today than it was yesterday, but your operating budget stays the same. It's not different with the baseball team. And I think the biggest misconception argument is the players who believe, hey, these teams are worth $1.5 billion, $3 billion, therefore we ought to be making more money. It just isn't going to work that way.
David, I'm curious, if we're talking about the salary cap and all these other arguments between the players and the owners or baseball in general, if you were to answer this question on behalf of the fans, what's best for baseball itself? Yeah. Is it a salary cap? Is it a salary floor? Is it something to encourage the low spenders to spend more? Is it capping the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets? What do you think is best for the sport of baseball and also the fans themselves?
You're not going to like this, but look at the other salary cap sports in basketball and football. Do you agree that each year there are teams who stink?
Yeah.
Each year. So So I don't fully understand when a team goes 2-15 in a salary cap league, do we look at that and say, wow, that's a problem with the system? Or do we say this is a rebuilding, or do we say it's just a crappy front office that can't put a team together? Or when a team spends a lot of money but doesn't make the playoffs like the Mets didn't 1 year or the Yankees didn't 1 year, do you say, wow, that's just a system that needs to be changed? Why don't we compliment the teams, whether they're small market or large market, the Guardians, the Rays, the Twins, the Orioles, who have good teams, make the playoffs, or the Dodgers, big payroll teams who make the playoffs year in and year out? How about putting a premium on talent, both on and off the field, in and out of your front office? I take the blame when we only won one ring over my 18 years. It's my fault. It's not the market. It's not the low payroll. I had plenty of payroll to work with. I just made bad decisions, bad signings, and it just didn't come together. That's not the fault of the system. I think it's more the fault of the person, in this case me, and in other cases other executives.
David, but like, there's a happy medium here, because like, I'm watching Michael Conforto making $18 million. He's like their fourth or fifth outfielder for the Dodgers. A lot of teams just can't afford to have that kind of bench and eat salaries. Like, case in point, at one point their IL had $500 million worth of salaries on it. Mm-hmm. Like, how are the Pirates supposed to, you know, compete against that when we're already talking about, hey, what kind of haul could they get for Paul Skeens if he doesn't sign a $150-$200 million deal? Like, I do believe it is a little out of whack.
I hear you, but let me ask you, do you believe there's a radio station out there with a higher operating margin and more money to go out there and pay for different guests or to have a better studio?
Yeah, it's called the Pat McAfee Show.
And by the way, you're doing just fine. You have a great show that people listen to. There's always a nicer car on the road. There's always a bigger house. There's always someone richer. No matter who you are, I mean, obviously, you know, if you're Bezos, you're Bezos. But whatever, that's the outlier. There's always going to be something that you're going to say, oh, I can't afford that. I wish I could. Boy, do I wish that I could afford to cover up all my mistakes the way the Dodgers did and not have to suffer through bad contracts and just release the player and move on and still have that money to spend. Of course. Of course I wish many things that just aren't realistic in the life that I have, and I'm more fortunate than 99.9% of the people out there. So I'm not buying what you're selling at the moment, because I think that no matter what a team has, they could say, wow, I wish I had more.
Mm. David, great stuff. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up with you next time.
I look forward to it. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David. That's David Sampson, former president of the Marlins, also host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson on Meadowlark Media. What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by Safeway. We will react to that conversation, plus Dave Fleming at 8:30. It's all on the way. Shasky and Grandy on the Morning Roast. Back with more next on 95.7 The Game. Of a salary cap, but specifically on the San Francisco Giants, his thoughts on a team struggling leading into the deadline. Generally, he said, doesn't really matter. You make your decision ahead of time and you stick with what that decision was. But he also said, you asked him this good question about meetings, player meetings, coach meetings, any kind of meeting when a team is struggling. And what was he said, quote, panic time or big time panic or something along those lines. Time to panic, and that is accurate for this Giants team.
So I watched a Pat McAfee and what was his old coach? The guy who got sick and for the Colts way back when for Andrew Luck.
Gosh,
what was his name?
Reich?
What?
Reich?
No, not Frank Reich. The other guy. Gosh darn it, it's gonna evade me. Anyway, he was basically saying, hey, when we would have player meetings or coach meetings with the players, he would turn to his wife. This is in his entire football career, and he'd be like, honey, might have to get a real estate agent and put the house on the market.
Pagano.
Chuck Pagano. Exactly. Two years ago, at the end of the year, there were rumors like, oh, they've had a bunch of player meetings. Talking about when Gabe Kapler was running the San Francisco Giants. It was like, all right, well, his fate's sealed. He's cooked. He's done. And he ended up being done. When I hear Bob Melvin last night at the podium say, oh, we've had a bunch of player meetings, we've had a bunch of coach meetings. A bunch? What? Like, all right, writing's on the wall. He's done. Like, that's just the way I view it.
Let's just hear it. Bob Melvin on team meetings.
We've addressed, we've had meetings, we had team meetings, we've had all kinds of meetings. It's going about there and fighting a little harder and winning a game and having a little bit more resolve, which we've shown this year. We just have not done it here recently.
It's over. I mean, look, he literally said we've had a bunch of meetings. Like, every meeting you can have, we've had. And this is the result. It's poor Bob. It's done. It's over. Like, whatever extension they gave him is irrelevant. That is a severance package. See you later. Is there a world where Bruce Bochy is, for whatever reason, out on the Texas Rangers and maybe he comes back? I don't know.
Whoa.
That is definitely something that I've pondered many, many times. But the view needs to be from here on out for Buster, for ownership, for everyone involved. If you make a move just for the now with zero view on 2026, it's almost organizational malpractice at this point. This is all about next year for me. So if you make a move in the next 24 to 48 hours and it does not have its sights squarely set on improving the 2026 team, it is one of the worst decisions you can make. I would not surrender a damn thing for a rental. It has to be something that is not just about now. It's about next year and beyond. That is how this organization needs to view it. As frustrated as we all are with the Devers deal, I know it is a long-term move, and I cannot lose my mind over 50, 60, 80 at-bats. I need to let it play out for a couple of years. And I think the same thing needs to be said for whatever deals that they're trying to create right now as we talk, or something that they've been working on for weeks on end. If it does not have 2026 as its sole purpose, we're doing organizational malpractice at this point.
Yeah.
Because 2025 is cooked.
Trade deadline is tomorrow at 3 Pacific. So 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific tomorrow. So we're approaching 24 hours away from the trade deadline. And what David Sampson told us about the trade deadline was essentially you kind of need the blessing of your ownership. First of all, if you have the blessing, then you go out and you try to buy. But if your ownership doesn't give you that blessing in the first place, then there's not really much you can do. Mm-mm. And when I think about and the Bob Melvin conversation aside for a moment, whether Melvin is the manager, whether it's Bochy again, whether it doesn't matter who, anybody else, what I am worried about, Shasky, with what's happened this year, and it's not just losing games, it's the embarrassing way in which they've happened. And the play from your maybe not all high-paid players, like Elliot Ramos, is on a low contract.
Cost control.
Yes, because he's young, and he's under team control for a while, which is what also makes him valuable around the league, by the way. But what Jung-Hoo Lee has done as well of late, and he's a big contract. What
$88 million left on that deal.
What Devers has done since being acquired, although I think everyone in the organization would agree that they expect him to be a whole lot better, and that's not asking all that much. Adames has been much better of late, but still for the first handful of months of his career as a Giant, that has been an overpay. What I am fearful of, Shasky, is an ownership that takes all of that into account and says, all right, over the last handful of years, I can go 500 and pay an incredible amount of money for it like I'm doing this year, or I can go 500 and pay however many millions of dollars fewer but still get the same record essentially. And I'm a little worried that we're going to get to a point where ownership, who we begged for years to be willing to spend money, and we were so upset is only concerned about their bottom line as opposed to winning baseball games, I'm concerned an ownership will look at what this season has been and say, you know what? Why would I be eager to spend more money? That's where my concern is. And even if the Giants don't want to buy because they think it's a bad decision from a baseball standpoint, ownership might not even give them the right of way in the first place. So and that goes into the future as well.
Okay, so you're looking at the results on the field.
Yes.
And that's solely the decision-making. That is what's factoring in the primary decision-making of ownership, the board, etc. That's what you think.
Well, the ownership signed off on signing Adames, extending Chapman, trading for Devers.
And you think the only algorithm that they care about is winning? Or it's the primary one?
Maybe. I mean,
I think we're underrating the
excitement of the fan base?
Yeah, just the money that they've made at the ballpark this year. I mean, look, last night, I don't know what was the attendance for last night. I just know Monday night.
38,000.
Yeah. 38,000 on a Tuesday night against the Pirates.
Yeah.
When you're in the middle of a 5-game slide. So to your point, like, could they view, yes, they're disappointed that the record isn't better. They want to win. Everyone wants to win. You know why? Because you get playoff money. And playoff money is better than anything.
Yep.
Right? And then you get playoff merch. But also, I do feel like this community is finally in love with the team and has fiscally supported them this year, unlike in years past. So is the bang for the buck better? I guess is where I'm going. Hey, we invested in these contracts, but we're making it like some of it back, not all of it, because you want to get playoff. I mean, trust me, you want the playoffs. But the silver lining is like fans care about this team again. And I don't think you could say that last year. I don't think you could say that the year before. I don't think people supported them. I don't think you get 38,000 on a Tuesday night against the Pirates in the middle of a 5-game losing streak. Do you?
You're probably right. So, but I'm curious what their bottom line would represent given all the extra millions of dollars that they're spending.
That is it. That is the algorithm or the profit margin sheet that I would love to see as well.
Yeah.
I would love to see that as well. We know that these teams, like, they want to make the playoffs because they want those home dates. I mean, there's a million reasons why.
Yeah.
But you get the home dates, you get the home merch sales, you get the home ticket sales, you get the Q rating through the roof. I mean, it's so you get to sell more advertisements. I mean, that's the boon. That's what you're looking for. But if you can't be a playoff team, the next best thing is to be wildly profitable because a lot of people, 3.5 million, are coming through your gates.
Yeah. So just David Sampson talking about that and trade deadline thoughts, and you need the blessing of ownership, made my mind go there. One of the other things that David Sampson said, and if you missed it, he joined us last segment, former president of the Marlins, host of the Nothing Personal with David Sampson podcast on Meadowlark Media, talking about player meetings. Here's what David Sampson had to say about a team that is engaging in multiple player meetings over a short period of time.
It's straight panic, and that's what it is. You don't want to have too many players meetings. You want to do them only, you know, occasionally during the season and right before your best pitcher is going against the team's worst pitcher, because you want to get a win after every player meeting if possible. And when we do a front office meeting, it was because something acute was happening where we needed to deal with it that minute, and we couldn't deal with it individually, so we'd get the whole team together. But when you're doing back-to-back meetings and you continue to lose games, the whole purpose of trading for Devers was to get an early start on being a buyer. The benefit of that is that if it doesn't work, you can turn into a seller by the deadline.
Mm. There's David Sampson. But that straight panic.
So, okay. Buyer, seller. Okay. A, what are we buying? B, what are you giving up within that buy? C, if you're a seller, what are you selling? And then underneath that, who wants whatever it is you're selling?
And what are you getting back?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it works both ways.
So, okay, let's go with the buyer thing. What do they need right now?
Oh, they need starting pitching.
For this year and next year. We're talking about big picture.
Yes.
This year and next year. How about a second baseman?
Yeah, probably.
How about another outfielder?
Yes.
Okay.
And maybe a catcher, too.
Exactly.
And maybe two starting pitchers.
So we're talking about a lot.
Yes.
I mean, we're looking at four or five. You could make the argument they need four or five things.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think many people would argue with you there.
All right. Yeah. Now, what are you giving up? What do people want to give up? So let's say in this hypothetical, your two best pieces to give up are probably what? Robbie Ray. I don't want to give him up. I need pitching. I'm already down on pitching. So giving up one of my best or second best pitchers, what does that do to my already depleted staff? All right. I think he's your best chip. Would you agree?
Him and Bryce Eldridge, probably.
Okay. What about Elliot Ramos?
He's up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
We already have an outfield need, and we're going to trade away an outfielder, right? That's why I'm walking through this process of like buying and selling. All right. What about the bullpen? Camilo Duvall. Would you trade him?
I'd consider it. He's not an immediate hang-up when somebody asks about him.
I would agree. Who would be your closer if you did trade him?
You would hope that Randy Rodriguez takes to the job.
Okay.
Seems like a pretty decent option, honestly.
I'm intrigued by the option.
Yeah.
I'm not dismissing it by any means. But these are the way that I think you need to do the thought process. Now, let's go the other direction, all right? That's if you're buying, right? No one wants Luciano. You're not getting Mitch Keller for Luciano. It's not happening, right? Would you agree?
No, yeah, of course not. Luciano's value has plummeted to almost near nothing at this point. He doesn't have a position.
What would a sell-off look like? Meaning this team tries to just maximize the return for the future. Who would you start with?
Robbie Ray.
Okay.
Even though that's kind of...
counterintuitive.
Because you... maybe that is maximize the value for 2-3 years from now as opposed to next year specifically, because that creates even more of a need for next year.
Exactly. I'm reluctant to move him because we need him for next year.
Yeah.
As I talk about, everything that you do right now needs to be focused on next year.
Well, there's different levels to this. There's this year, and then there's the future, but the future is next year's future. Is it 2 years from now? 3 years from now? Is it 5 years down the road? Those are all different questions.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking at a 33, 34-year-old Willie Adames and Matt Chapman.
You're looking at next year.
Exactly, right? So that's why, to me, I take Robbie Ray off the board. And I kind of have been this setting for a while. Yes, in my mind, it makes total sense. He nets you back the biggest haul. But I also recognize he probably means more to me and my rotation than whatever my farm would get back, which might help me in years to come.
That's fair.
If I'm weighing the two.
Yes.
Now, Ramos, I think, is different. Ramos, I think, like, he's a big league player. He's cost-controlled, so there are more teams that are willing to look at him. I think he can get you back major league-ready talent. I think he is a talented player. It would create a hole in the outfield for you. But I think I would start if I'm talking about, like, selling, I would dangle Ramos and Camilo Duval. If I was doing this exercise properly, I would dangle them together to see what kind of a difference maker I can get who can help me in 2026 dramatically. And I think it would start with, can I find a top of the order guy? Whether that is a corner outfielder, whether that's a second baseman. Can I find a second or third guy to help in the rotation somewhere between Logan Webb, Robbie Ray, and Landon Roop? Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm willing to package those two together. They're both making pre-arb numbers financially. I think that they're desired, you know, long term. They're more valuable to these other teams around the league than whatever your prospects are that aren't named Bryce Eldridge.
Yeah, and it's interesting the way that you laid that out, because the whole umbrella was that's selling, and it's selling on this year, but it's really more like buying for next year. So, like, it kind of just depends your mindset and how you look at it.
Exactly.
Because you are trading away your, somewhat valuable pieces, but major league pieces that can help a contender right now. Like, if a team has a need for a DH and they're calling the Giants, they're going to be asking about Elliot Ramos.
100%.
No contender who wants to go to the playoffs is going to feel great about putting Ramos in left field for a playoff game. Like, no one is going to love that situation. But if they have an open DH spot, and spoiler, the Giants do not. The Giants have like four DHs right now, and they only play one of them. I don't think a second and third and fourth DH is coming to the National League.
They're very redundant.
They are.
The Giants roster.
But so that would be a sell in the standpoint of the other team is getting the piece that they think is going to help them this year, but you have to really middle it where the team that is acquiring either Ramos or Duval or both is giving you a piece that you feel great about helping you next year, but if you feel great about them helping you next year, wouldn't the team that is trading them away now, who wants to win now, still want them now? Because if they're going to help next year, then conceivably they can help now as well. So it feels like a really difficult proposition. It's almost what the Padres are trying to do. The Padres are trying to trade Dylan Cease.
Shed him.
To get somebody else to help them win right now. And it's like, okay, well, how is a team that's acquiring Dylan Cease going to want Dylan Cease, but to give up something that is helping now? Because Dylan Cease can also help now. And if your goal is to sell, don't you not want someone to help now? Like, I don't know. The logic almost, it finds... it's almost like the Kuminga situation where it's really difficult to find the right trade partner because so many things have to work right.
Yes, but I look at the Giants right now and I say to myself, okay, who are the teams that you would be potentially trying to look for to poach? These guys that are impact players that can help you into next year and through next year. I think it starts at Atlanta. With the Ronald Acuna injury last night, which I don't know if you guys saw it, but Ronald Acuna, one of the five-tool talents in the game, has two ACL injuries already, was going after a fly ball that I believe ended up foul and came up limp. And They think he might have blew out his Achilles.
Yeah, they're calling it Achilles soreness or something like that. I forget exactly what.
And if you watch the play, it was bad. I mean, it was really bad.
He knew it immediately.
He did, and he was crying in the post game. I'm sure we'll get an update at some point today. What's going on with Matt Olson? What's going on with Sean Murphy? What's going on with Ozzie Albies? What's going on with Austin Riley? Now, I know Austin Riley plays third base, but these are the conversations that I would be having with a team like them. Because now, their future, similar to the way the Indiana Pacers, kind of like, whoa, everything changed with the Halliburton injury. Same thing now with this Acuna injury.
They're calling it tightness in his right Achilles. He's on the 10-day IL.
I mean, that's as of now.
Brian Snitker said it's an Achilles thing. It's going to take a while. He'll go on the IL, and hopefully in 10 days or so, it'll clear up. That, to me, doesn't sound like it's going to take a while if he's only on the 10-day IL.
Yeah.
I would imagine he's going to get transferred to something else, but we will see. But, yeah, that's a big deal. I think even if Acuna is out, the Braves probably look at this as, well, we still got a lot of talent. We'll just reset and try to do this again next year.
Possibly.
It's worth a call, though, from the Giants.
Yeah, possibly. But, like, those are the types of teams that I'd be looking for. Now, if you were to move Robbie Ray... the Baltimore Orioles, by the way, would be another team that I would be looking at because they have a plethora of guys both in the infield and outfield, and they need pitching, right? They need pitching long term. They need a guy like a Robbie Ray under team control for next year because they think they can bounce back and be good next year. Detroit is free falling, and they're in it, and they think they're in it. What would they be willing to give up for a starting pitcher and a reliever like Ray and Doval? Those, like, what? Where are we at with the Yankees right now? They need an outfielder. Not sure if you paid attention, but Aaron Judge is down right now. You know, they could sure use an impact bat. They could always use pitching. They could always use bullpen. You know, these are the teams that I would be out there just seeing what's available. What do you have? What do we have? How can we figure something out?
David Sampson on with us last hour, former president of the Miami Marlins, had this to say about what the Giants' plans should be at the trade deadline.
And I don't really understand how the Giants would do anything other than sell in the next 24 to 30 hours because they're not in the race. They're not a playoff team, and you have to understand how to evaluate your team. If they want to be in bed with Devers and they're going to keep him and they're going to pay him the balance of his contract, which it appears that's the choice they made. You just got to be smart about being realistic. But we'll see what the Giants do. But they're an interesting test case of having done something early and then falling apart.
Yeah, of course, what he's talking about there is trading for Devers in June and being the worst team in baseball since somehow. And now you're at a point where the plan clearly was to buy. And now you're at a point, well, we're 500. We are, what, 9 games behind the Dodgers? Is that what it is? 9 games behind the Dodgers? Yeah, I mean, 9 behind the Dodgers and 5 behind the Padres for the third wildcard spot, and the Reds and the Cardinals are now both ahead of you. And the reality, as David Sampson laid out, is you're probably not a playoff team. The math suggests that you have to go, what's the number that you have to go in order to make the postseason? San Diego is pacing for 89 wins. The Giants would have to go 35-19 to win 89 games the rest of the year.
Only the best clip of the year.
So playoffs seems very unlikely.
In the last 4 years, I don't think they've gone they haven't had a stretch.
I was just thinking that too. I don't think they've had a stretch anywhere near that good since 2021.
Exactly,
probably
right?
Not.
So basically, yeah, like as I said yesterday, they basically have to play a brand of baseball that they have just not played at all over the last few years, and they're in. So, you know, there's a chance.
Congrats. So if that's the reality, and it seems that is, I don't think many people would argue with that. It would take a hell of a stretch of baseball over the final 54 to get into the playoffs. If that's the reality, then I don't know if Sampson saying that sell is the only thing they should do because they are in a unique situation where they think they can compete as early as next year. A classic sell, I don't think, is the move either because, as you laid out, you have Robbie Ray under contract for next year. It's entirely different if he is a rental and you don't feel good about him coming back next year, but he's under contract for next year. So I don't know how a classic sell is also the right thing, but definitely a buy is the... A buy for 2025 is the worst thing they could possibly do.
Yeah, just a short-term buy would be absolutely reckless. Do you want to trade Robbie Ray?
For the right return, I would, yes. But it would take something pretty impressive to get me to do it because you are absolutely right. The chance for this team to compete in 2026 without Ray, considering what the rest of the rotation is, seems like a tall task.
Exactly. I think in years past, when you had Rodon and Snell on one-year deals,
yes,
it was like, this makes all the sense.
They
should have
traded Snell last year. I'm still upset about it.
I argued with Bonte every single morning about it, and then you didn't have a draft pick. Right, like, that was the other part. Not only did you surrender a draft pick, which you forfeited in the second round this year and the third round for Chapman, but at least Chapman you signed to a 5-year extension.
But congrats, Snell threw a no-hitter one day in Cincinnati.
Yeah, extremely, extremely forgettable for most fans. And so, like, those ones were no-brainers to me. This one I think is a little more difficult. And I also think it's more difficult coupled by the fact that you have Adames, Chapman, and Devers as a nucleus that you're not going to punt on seasons in their prime. I'm talking about for next year, mm-hmm. right? And trading away Robbie Ray for something that may not help you for 3 or 4 years, to me, would be punting on the primes of those guys' careers. Because you do have very few assets. This is one of your assets. And so how you utilize it, I think, is extremely important.
Yeah. 888-957-9570. We're reacting to what David Sampson, former president of the Marlins, told us about what the Giants' plans should be at the deadline. Is it as simple as just buying or selling, or is there a lot more to kind of sift through here? Because the Giants maybe realize they can't compete now, but they can compete next year. So what should the Giants do? And plus, we're continuing to react to all the madness that happened last night. Elliot Ramos, what the hell are you doing? Let's go out to the phone lines. 888-957-9570. Gary in Daly City wants to weigh in. Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I've been a fan of him since the 60s. I just want to know a couple of things. Two things. One, who's the adult in the room with Buster Posey? I mean, he has the same people that he had before with Farhan. I mean, with the Warriors, you had Jerry West who said, do not trade Clay Thompson or I'm gone. You had John McVay between Bill Walsh and Eddie DeBartolo. You had Ned Colletti between Sabian, who should be back here, but we know the off-field stuff, and Bruce Bochy. There's no one to say Buster to do, you know, teach him the ropes. He's got it because he's got the same people around him. Two, my mom always said, if you don't make a call, you don't know what the answer is going to be. Mm. You might like the answer, you might not. Why not call around about Devers? Why not see what the Yankees could offer you? Why not? Because you have the 27th ranked farm system in baseball. That's not good. You need to restock. And if the fans got a problem with it, so what? Robbie Ray has how many throws left in his arm? You don't know. Duvall, you can't even get to your bullpen because you're not winning games.
Exactly.
Why not just see? I mean, all you can do is say no, but you at least see it around, and then you start from – then you just bring somebody in from the outside that knows what the blank and put his arm around Buster and said, this is how we do it in a from an outside look. And you say, Bo Mel and your coaching staff, have a nice day. See you later.
Mm.
That's what you do. I mean, maybe people are going to go after me. I don't care.
No,
I didn't like the Devers trade. But you can't eat. My buddy's a scout. He said he can't hit an outside foul. How many fastballs do the Giants miss?
Dave, wait. For one second. Leave him on. Dave.
Gary.
Oh, Gary, excuse me. I apologize. It's Gary. I have never seen Devers hit the fastball. He's late on every one of them. I thought he was a great fastball hitter. It's almost mind-blowing, is it not?
Not hit a fastball away. He could. The guy I know is 80-something. He's with the Dodgers. He said he could not hit a fastball away.
He's right.
That's what he told me before the trade. But anyway, you just see what you could get. Like I said, my mom always said, I'll make it quick. You make a call and see what you can get for these guys. You can always say no. They can always hang up on you. But maybe you got something of interest.
Don't be a stranger. Call in again.
Thanks, Gary.
Great call.
I mean,
it's a man who's seen some things.
The Giants have said, decision makers have said, this was a question, I think, specifically about Eldridge and if he's untouchable. And Zach Manassian, GM, said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing here, we don't like the word untouchable. Nobody is untouchable.
I agree.
Generally about Eldridge, he said we expect him to be a Giant for a long time. But I don't think the Giants are opposed to taking or making calls on anybody potentially. I will say, if they were to turn around and trade Devers, this city would lose its mind.
Well, what would it be for?
I mean, of course, that matters.
You know, I would want to know what it's for. Yeah, I do think we would go crazy, but
it would be a disaster.
Well,
what it would be.
I mean, look, if you somehow found a way to flip him and I don't know, like, and you just totally got back some crazy haul, I mean, you'd have to at least consider it.
Yeah, again, I'm not saying they're hanging up the phone, but that would be a disaster. You, a month and a half ago, get the best bat, or what everyone expected was going to be the best bat you've had in this town for a decade. best power hitter you've had since Barry Bonds, but best overall hitter probably since Buster. And a month and a half later, you turn around and trade him away?
Yeah, that wouldn't be great on the surface, but think about what you did there, though. You took Jordan Hicks, a first-round pick who was down in low single A, and Kyle Harrison, who is still in triple A. You flip that for Devers, and then flip Devers for what? Like, that's what I would want to know.
The return, of course, matters.
Yes, exactly.
But the optics of it is absolutely terrible.
No doubt.
No matter what.
No doubt. It doesn't look great. I'm not going to deny that. But again, what do you get back? I would love to know. I wonder what he would be netting you on the open market. It's a thought exercise, is it not?
Sure. Yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, the Red Sox were in a unique position because they were at their wit's end with Devers, the player in terms of what he was willing to do for the team and how he was making life difficult for them. If the Giants turn around and trade him a month and a half later, I think the baggage that came from Boston is still there, even though he's playing first base, and you have a month and a half of evidence that he isn't a good hitter at the moment either. I don't know how the Giants would get a ton, absolute ton for that at the moment.
Again, I don't know. I mean, but again, those teams in the AL East would know him significantly more than we would.
True.
So I don't know. I think it's a fair thought exercise. I'm not contemplating it just this moment. But I'm also not ruling it out because that's how bad it's been, right?
They don't have, we'll put it this way, they don't have the ability to rule anything out.
When you have a 25th ranked farm and you're...
I'd be worse than that, 28th,
okay,
I think.
Okay, well, depending on where you're looking at it, right? Like, I don't think you can scoff your nose at any deal out there right now. You need to have a crew of guys come up making no money and all be good. Like, that's what you need desperately right now.
Yeah. You do need it, no doubt. Let's go back out to the phone lines, 888-957-9570.
Right now, did you see that the Astros, just before you continue.
Yeah, what's up?
The Astros are looking for a third baseman right now, right? The kid that they have got hurt that they traded for Kyle Tucker. And so they're, like, sniffing around Arenado, and they're sniffing around all these other guys that might be plausibly available.
They're probably trying to get Suarez from the Diamondbacks.
I mean, what would they give you for Devers if he wants to go back to third base? What does he look like in that situation? Boy, that Crawford box looks a lot like the Boston Red Sox Fenway. Does it not? I mean, those are the things. Like, and that team, Houston, you've had a lot of ties with them. Pete Pachulia, who used to run your organization, was a part of that organization. I'm sure they have familiarity. There's been a lot of discussions back and forth on various trades. I don't know. Like, those are things. I'm not ruling it out, I guess, is where I'm going at right now.
Yeah, Giants legend Mauricio Dubon is an Astro.
He won a gold glove as a utility player.
He did. After he... was going through what Ramos is going through right now.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the worst base runners in baseball.
Well, and also Dubon put down a bunt in a 10-run game.
Yeah. Yeah. 888-957-9570. Richie in Queens is up next. Richie, tell us about the Giants. What do you got?
I think they're done, guys. I can't see them buying. They have so many holes. That last three innings, you know, when Kipe says do up for the Giants, they should have said who, what, and I don't give a darn. You know the three guys from the Evan Costello who's on first? You know, it's gotten to a point where that last inning was just Devers' at-bat was unbelievable. And I know it's a two-run game. It's like, you know, it's almost insurmountable to think that we can possibly get two Chapman swung at that last pitch. Obviously, Ramos might be the dumbest player I've ever seen. And I go back a long way. He just doesn't have a clue. And look, he plays hard and whatever it may be. But I looked at Wisenhunt. You know, to me, guys, nothing. I've seen 30 lefties like him. There's nothing electric about him. And I'm not going to go with one start. Maybe I'm, you know, jumping the gun. But you think about what their needs are. Again, no leadoff hitter. Lee has been a total, at this point, a bust. He just has. Lee, no leadoff hitter, no second, no third. Devers, I thought, could be a three. And Adames has been great. He's a five hitter. Chapman is a six hitter on a good team.
Yeah.
He strikes out insurmountable times. So, and then you look at the bottom with Bailey, and with our second base position, and obviously Matos, I've had it with him too. You know, given an opportunity, and Yastrzemski, you know what the tip-off with him was? That when the lefty came in or the righty came in, there wasn't even a thought of taking Matos out and putting Yaz in. So that tells you what they feel about him. So, yeah, I don't know what the answer is, what Posey is thinking at this point. They are not even close to any of those wild card teams.
They're not.
Whether it's Cincinnati, maybe. But you look at the Padres, Aziz and Tatis and Machado and Merrill, and we just ever, even when Adames hits the home run, okay, great, 1-0. Then we got a man on second, 2 out. Lee, would you possibly get a 2 out hit, roll over to second base?
Hey,
really,
Richie.
Really frustrated, Richie, guys. And yeah. By the way, I canceled my trip to Milwaukee.
No!
Oh, Richie.
What's sad, this is a sad sentence, as disappointed as you are with Jung-Hoo Lee, he's like the third or fourth best hitter on the team.
Yeah, and that's sad because we have, there's nobody on that team to say, wow, I thought Devins would be, but it's Devins, and I know it's not really a small sample anymore. He's late on 93.
I know.
I mean, Chapman is late on 93. You know, Adames is the best hitter with the fastball, but and he's been great. His numbers have been solid, but they are just, Verlander gave you a good effort, not having three starters, not having five. Bullpen, maybe he's going to get worn down. If they win four in a row, we get within two games, maybe I'll be calling you next week and say, but you can't look at this team and say, bye, we are missing one, no, two, no, three. Missing four things.
I know. Let me give you some numbers on Adames, which is no one's bringing this up. So, I think we have to be somewhat fair here. He's playing outstanding at the plate. He's batting .341 in the month of July. .341, .390 post All-Star break. That's incredible.
He's raking. He is raking.
I believe he's got seven home runs, 21 RBIs. I mean, he's been outstanding. Cut the strikeouts in half from one month to the other. He has been excellent. Excellent. .341 in July.
And yet the Giants are 2-11 in their last 13. They're 13-25 in their last 38, the worst record in baseball in that span. With Devers, 13-23, also the worst record in baseball during that span. Since Devers' debut, they're the worst team in baseball.
I we did a deep dive on their batting averages and everything. It feels like everything is exactly the same. Even
basically.
Which is
offense,
why...
Offense has not changed. Pitching has been way worse since Devers.
I mean, the pitching was hanging on by a thread prior. And then you get a couple of injuries. I mean, yesterday was the best start of Verlander's season. Hands down.
He's had some other good ones. But he was amazing last night.
I thought he was excellent last night.
Yeah, he was very good.
The stuff looked good. I thought he limited, crisis situations. He was excellent last night.
Just walked one, struck out 7 in 5 innings, gave up one run, and it was a solo homer. That's it.
Look, you want to say there was another start? Fine. I just thought he was really, really good last night. And once again, the offense is nowhere to be found. How many times can we say that this year?
Over and over and over again. And it's not just the offense. I mean, it's not just when you're at the plate. It's when you're out on the base paths.
And
it's when you're on the field as well. I mean, the play in the eighth inning with Rodgers on the mound, where Casey Schmidt fields the ball between first and second. First baseman Devers ranges over thinking maybe he could grab it, but he can't. Schmidt gets it. So Rodgers has to cover second, but they have a force out at, or he has to cover first, but they have a force out at second. Schmidt looks to second, begins to throw.
Pump fakes.
But realizes I can't get him out there. So pulls the ball back, but all Rodgers saw was Casey Schmidt begin the throwing motion to second, then he put his eyes back on the bag to get his foot in place to feel the throw. When he does that, puts his head back up, he looks to second, doesn't see the ball coming, because the second baseman, or the shortstop, Adames, doesn't have it at second base. As that happens, Schmidt, who fielded the ball, throws to first, but Rodgers isn't looking for it, so it goes past him and hits the runner, luckily enough. So a run does not score, but it's more than, I mean, the offense has been terrible. You're not wrong, obviously, but everything is going wrong now. The pitching is going wrong, although it did not last night. The defense is going wrong. The base running is going wrong. The simple baseball processes are going wrong. Everything is going wrong.
I mean, even when Ryan Walker comes into the game and gets out of a nice little jam there, you know, you're still like holding your breath thinking what bad's going to happen, right? It's Murphy's Law for this team right now.
It really is. It really is. All right. Break coming up here in just a couple of minutes, but first time for our injury report.
It's time for the injury report.
It really hurts.
brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years.
Sam's telling me we got some Kuminga stuff we got to bring up here. Go nowhere.
We'll do that
Something's
coming up in a little bit.
Happening.
After missing the last two games with an ankle injury, Monique Billings' return to the court was a short one for the Golden State Valkyries. Billings had to leave the game after just 9 minutes of play when she re-injured her ankle and did not return. It was not immediately known afterwards if Billings will once again miss time for this latest setback with her ankle. That was the injury report brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years. And as you just heard Shasky say, what's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. That is an update on the Kuminga crisis. We have some news to react to that Anthony Slater just dropped. We will do that when we come back. Some Jonathan Kuminga developments. The saga is not over, but more developments. We'll get to that when we return. It's the Morning Roast. Shasky and Grandy with you here on 95.7 The Game.